You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me as always, Rob Rang. Happy Thursday. Today's episode is brought to you by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Rob, the Seahawks are off today, coming off their scrimmage yesterday. Typically, when they have a preseason game or a mock scrimmage, the next day they are off. Let guys have a rest day. But it's safe to say right now, there are bigger fish to fry than sports, given what happened in Wisconsin a few days ago. Jacob Blake in Wisconsin was shot 7 times in the back by a police officer, and Blake is a black man, and we know where things have been recently in this realm of racial injustice and police brutality. It was a topic that throughout the summer was very prevalent. Things have gotten a little bit better in recent weeks. And then this happened a few days ago. And now we're seeing the NBA take the lead step here. The Milwaukee Bucks boycotting their 5th game in their playoff series against the Orlando Magic. And then several other teams followed suit. All the games that were scheduled for yesterday were postponed. And as of last night, LeBron James being one of the ringleaders behind this, the Lakers and Clippers wanted to completely scrap the rest of the postseason. Every other team wanted to continue. So apparently LeBron James walked out of the meeting in disgust that the league was not stepping up to the plate on this. Well, today it looks now like the league is going to continue the playoffs, and maybe that'll start back up tomorrow. Today's games have been postponed. We've seen Major League Baseball games be postponed. There were 3 of them yesterday that did not play. There were some MLS games that were postponed. And today, a bunch of NFL teams choosing not to practice. So that led to the question yesterday for Pete Carroll. We're seeing these NBA teams boycotting games, the potential of the NBA's bubble being completely burst there by these social justice issues. He was asked, do you see any way that the NFL could follow suit? And Carroll's response was, anything's possible. I mentioned to the players this is the year, the protest season. It's the season of protesting, and we'll handle ourselves as we do. This is a protest that doesn't have to end to it until all the problems go away and we solve the issues and stuff. So we're going to do our part and continue to work to stay actively involved and continue to stay in touch with the situations that are going on by staying on the topics and with it, just in hopes that we can be there to help and support where we can and have influence where we can. The kind of response that I was expecting from Carroll, and I don't know necessarily that we are going to see this happen, but I think he's right in this instance that anything's possible, because clearly the message is not being received by the people that need it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, is that this is a message being delivered in this case with Pete Carroll, who has lived this message in his entire career. I mean, he has been somebody who has literally marched for change. And the fact that the Seahawks two days ago at this point, had the New Jersey senator and former presidential hopeful Cory Booker, participate in a meeting with the team to kind of discuss all of the different, inequality and social justice issues that have plagued our nation, not only for, the last year, but the 250 years before that. And the fact that it is coming to a head right now, that our sports community, which of course is so predominantly African-American, is using its stage to voice their fury, their disgust, their disappointment, and the lack of empathy that so many around our country and around our planet have shown to this point. So I applaud the Seahawks for what they've done. I certainly applaud the Milwaukee Bucks, the Los Angeles Lakers, the Los Angeles Clippers, the Seattle Mariners, opting out of their Major League Baseball game, as you mentioned yesterday as well. I think that this is a prime time to huddle together and to figure out all the different things that are plaguing our society, and as important as sports are, at the same time, obviously, they pale in comparison to the health and safety of all citizens. And I think that I just applaud the athletes and the teams for recognizing the influence that they can have and using that to fight the good fight.
And again, for those that are listening to our show that are like, look, I don't listen to Locked On Seahawks for politics. This is not politics. It's not. It's human rights. And if you've seen the video, quite frankly, I've gotten to the point now, Rob, where I used to share those videos around, but now I'm just – I've seen this happen so many times, especially over the last couple months, that at this point it's just – it's gotten to the point where I don't want to share it around because it, clearly, like I said, there's still a lot of people that aren't getting the message. They're watching the video and then they're just moving on with their lives. And that's why we're seeing these professional athletes boycott games, especially playoff games, because they're trying to get the message across like, look, this is not okay. We cannot continue doing this. And I found this interesting. I believe yesterday that it was Jusina Anderson that actually tweeted this out. The last time that there was an NBA game that was boycotted, it was 1961 by Bill Russell and the Boston Celtics. And they were boycotting the game for civil rights issues. And we are now almost 60 years later, and we are still battling the same issues. And that's the reason that these guys are not playing. And that's why NFL teams are not practicing today. We're still in the same spot more than half a century later. That's just an indictment on our society. And again, this is not politics. This is just everybody should be treated the same. And that is not happening. We have not made the progress here that we should have. And these athletes have every right to do what they are doing right now to draw attention to this cause because it has to be addressed.
It does have to be addressed. And I think that the conversations, as uncomfortable as they can be for a lot of people, I think that it is important because, as you just mentioned, I mean, 60 years ago, you know, and you and I, as former history teachers, we all know that expression that those who don't understand history are doomed to repeat it. And there's a lot of people out there who can say that, and yet here we are repeating that same history. And so I think that it is important to have some conversations. I know with some friends and family that I've talked to, that they've echoed the same kind of things. I'm sure that you've heard and that many have heard. As far as I look to sports as a diversion, as entertainment. You know, this is something that, I don't want the sports figures or the sports analysts to be talking about these types of issues. Well, sorry, see what other sports are out there, because the dynamic athletes, the dynamic coaches, the responsible organizations are getting ahead of this. And I'm just proud to be in some way associated with one of the teams and one of the regions in this country that is trying to get ahead of this and actually have those types of conversations to facilitate the change that we need so we can focus back on winning Super Bowls.
And for the people that are out there arguing that this is not going to do anything, just postponing a game, canceling a game is not going to do anything. And you have people on the other side of the coin that are just arguing, as you said, for entertainment purposes, your job is to entertain me, not to bring up these issues. As you mentioned, especially in the NBA, the vast majority of the players are black. So they absolutely have every right to do what they're doing right now. Especially, you look at the Bucks. They have a couple players that have been involved in incidents where the police have been unfair to them. Sterling Brown, I believe, is the one that's on their team that there was a major issue a couple years ago that ended up coming to light. And I don't have all the details in front of me right now, but I can tell you that just because you are a wealthy athlete does not mean that you are excluded from these issues. Several of these players have had things happen to them. And so enough is enough, and they're speaking out, and now they're letting their actions do the speaking here by not playing. So hopefully we can start to see some progress, and some of these people that need to be informed are actually going to wake up to these issues. And like you said, I admire the athletes for doing what they're doing right now, because this is bigger than sports right now. This is a social issue that has been a problem that has plagued our country pretty much since the beginning. And we just have not addressed it the way that it needs to be addressed. So right now is the time to do it. We don't wait anymore. And so I admire what they're doing in the NBA and around the rest of the sports world. Coming up next in the second quarter, we're going to switch back to football here. Rob and I are going to discuss and debate who will make the Seahawks 53-man roster, starting on the offensive side of the football. A few changes from my last projection. We'll see what Rob is going to dish out as well. You won't want to miss it. You're listening to Locked On Seahawks Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate, and all the parts are available for your vehicle. Choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "locked in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com.
Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, along with my good friend, Rob Rang. It's time to make our latest 53-man roster projection. I usually wait to do this until after the Seahawks have played two preseason games in a normal training camp. But we don't have preseason games this year, so we're going to use the mock games. Both the major mock games have been completed. They will have one more at the VMAC, but the two games at CenturyLink Field are now in the books. Yesterday got to play all four quarters. So, Rob, I think you and I now have a pretty good idea on how this depth chart is going to shake out on offense and defense. So let's start at the quarterback position. I know that he's been on the bubble, but I'm pretty sure Russell Wilson's going to be making this football team. And at this point, I think Geno Smith is a lock. It was evident to me yesterday by the fact that they didn't even play him until the last drive. This was an instance where it was because, well, he was 8-for-8 in the other mock game. He's really played well at practice. We know he's our backup. They really wanted to see Anthony Gordon versus Danny Etling to try to figure out who's going to be our third quarterback. So to me, this one's pretty set in stone.
Yeah, I agree. Russell Wilson, obviously. Geno Smith, obviously. And this is a conversation about Danny Etling, Anthony Gordon. I think that Etling, if their third quarterback, if the Seahawks do decide to keep a third quarterback, then I think that the favorite at this point, based on what I've seen, is Etling, not only because of his experience, because of his talent, because of his size, because of his fit in the offense. I am intrigued by Gordon. I do think that he is a practice squad candidate if he is released and if he clears waivers by the other clubs. But at the same time, in my opinion, it is the three: Russell Wilson, Geno Smith, Danny Etling.
Now at the running back position, Chris Carson has been gone for most of training camp, addressing personal issues, had a death in the family, obviously much more important than football. And the couple of practices he's been out there, he's looked like your normal Chris Carson. So he's going to be the guy. He returned yesterday. He's supposed to be at practice tomorrow. So they get their lead back. Hopefully now he'll be here for the long haul. Carlos Hyde was really impressive in their mock scrimmage yesterday, 1,000-yard rusher for the Texans last year. And then you got Travis Homer and DJ Dallas. With Rashad Penny opening the season on the PUP list, I don't see any way that he's going to be available in week one. I think he misses the first six games of the season. And they don't have to rush him back because DJ Dallas has looked so good in training camp and the mock scrimmages. And Travis Homer gives you some special teams value, and he's done some nice things on offense. So, again, like the quarterback position, no changes for me compared to the last time that I did a 53-man projection. Those four running backs are all going to be on the football team.
Yeah, I certainly believe so. As you mentioned, with Rashad Penny, anticipated to be one of a couple of players we'll be talking about today that we anticipate being on the PUP list, then I think that this is pretty easy to look at. You have the rookie Patrick Carr, who I think is likely to be released. Nick Ballore, the fullback, I think is an interesting conversation. But because we have seen such intriguing play from the two former Miami backs, DJ Dallas, and of course the back selected ahead of him, Travis Homer, then I think that Seattle continues the trend that they've done in the past, sticks with the four running backs, which of course would be Chris Carson, then Carlos Hyde, Travis Homer, DJ Dallas, with Rashad Penny again on the PUP list. And if he is back after 6 weeks into the regular season, then the Seahawks might have to make a difficult decision with one of those two Miami backs at that point.
Now the receiver position, this is probably where I had the most difficult time, because We heard the news yesterday that Paul Richardson was brought in for a visit and a workout. And so I was considering putting Paul Richardson on their week one roster, but I decided not to, because David Moore has looked better the last couple practices. He looked decent in the scrimmage yesterday as well. I've got DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett obviously cemented as your one and two receivers. Philip Dorsett's dealing with a sore foot. I expect he'll be fine for week one. John Ursua dealing with a slight tweak to his hamstring. I expect he's going to be fine as well. So both those guys making the team along with David Moore. And that's where my issue was, trying to figure out who the sixth receiver is. If Cody Thompson had not missed the last week, I would have had a hard time not picking him for this last spot. But since he's been out, I think that now he's outside looking in. It's going to be really difficult for him to make this roster. So I was torn there between, do I want to put Freddie Swain on the roster? Do I put Paul Richardson? Do I put Josh Gordon being reinstated? There's a lot of moving parts there, but I decided to go based off what is currently on the roster. I think Freddie Swain has shown you enough as a receiver. He's played both inside and outside, according to Brian Schottenheimer. He can return kicks. So I think he gets that last spot at the receiver spot right now. I gave some slight consideration to Penny Hart as well, but I just felt like Freddie Swain being a sixth rounder, a little more upside as a receiver than Hart's going to give you, a better athlete overall, going to keep the rookie that they drafted over Hart in this instance.
Yeah, I made that same decision. Freddie Swain, just not only the athleticism, but the positional versatility. We saw him returning some kicks and punts, during the game and during the mock game here just yesterday. And of course, that is something that he did very effectively against SEC competition. And so I think that's one of the reasons why he does have a little bit of a head start over a player, say, like Penny Hart. I have the Seahawks keeping the six receivers. Philip Dorsett, I have the same concerns about his health. Assuming that the Seahawks feel good about it, because he has practiced, of course, during training camp, he would not be eligible for the PUP list, as I understand it. And as we talked about with a player like Paul Richardson, a player like Josh Gordon, while the Seahawks may be able to bring them on the roster at this point, I just went with the receivers who are currently on their roster. So I have it being, of course, Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, John Ursua, Freddie Swain, David Moore, and as I mentioned, Philip Dorsett. So that being my six, unfortunately, that means Cody Thompson, Petty Hart, Seth Dawkins, Aaron Fuller, all guys I think that are on the outside looking in. Fortunately, all of those players are also practice squad eligible at this point.
And I actually have Aaron Fuller on the practice squad right now because Pete Carroll was talking very highly about him yesterday. He caught a touchdown from Danny Etling. He played well in the first mock game as well. So he has surpassed my expectations. I thought he was just going to be a camp body, but maybe he has an opportunity to be a practice squad player that they can continue to develop right now. He's certainly made some plays in these games, and he's had some nice practices as well. Now the tight end position, this is where I had a little bit of fun because I don't know if fun's the right word because it stinks to release a player that is beloved by Seahawk fans. But that's what I ended up doing here because there's some really tough decisions. Obviously, Greg Olsen and Will Dissly are going to be your 1-2 tight ends. Jacob Hollister caught a touchdown yesterday. He gives you a different dynamic at that position. So those three are going to be there. Here's where things get tricky. Colby Parkinson has yet to practice for the Seahawks, but Pete Carroll seems to think he's very close to returning to the field. So does that mean he's going to be available in week one? We don't know. He has yet to practice. I, in this particular projection, to have him starting the year on the PUP list or on the non-football injury list because he suffered that foot injury during the offseason. So he would not be available until after six games under that premise. So that would make you think, all right, Luke Wilson then's got the fourth tight end spot locked up. But I think Steven Sullivan is just too intriguing of a player for them to try to slip to practice squad. I just don't see it happening. I think he's a player with his size and athleticism. If he hits the waiver wire, he is going to get plucked up by somebody. And I don't think the Seahawks want to lose him after trading back into the seventh round to draft him. So I decided, look, you've already got Will Dissly. You've got Greg Olsen. Colby Parkinson's going to be back at some point. So I decided to keep Steven Sullivan over Luke Wilson, who is on a close to veteran minimum contract on a one-year deal. I'm keeping the guy with more upside that you can develop in this case than I know I'm not going to be able to stash on the practice squad.
Yeah, I am as well, and I think that the Seahawks will too. I think that when you're talking about Sullivan, again, just the athletic upside that he offers, and as you mentioned, Corbin, the decision to trade back into the draft and give up two draft picks, obviously the one you used on him as well as the one you had to trade to get back into the seventh round to select him, I think that's just too much draft commodities spent on a player to then release him a couple of months later, especially with a player that has the personal character that Sullivan has that clearly the Seahawks bought into. That he has looked raw, but that was the expectation. And so I think that right now, I think that the Seahawks are likely to keep four tight ends on the active roster, as you mentioned with Colby Parkinson, possibility for the NFI list, possibility for the PUP list, whatever the case might be. I don't think that he makes your active day one roster because of the injury. I just don't think he's going to be ready to hit the ground running. But I certainly think that hitting the ground running is going to be what Greg Olsen, Will Dissly, Jacob Hollister are going to do. And then I do also have Stephen Sullivan on the roster. Tyler Mabry is another one who I think is right there in that mix. But again, just the fact that Seattle has allocated what they did with Sullivan, I think gives him the nod over Mabry.
Let's talk offensive line now, because Brandon Shell, we're both going to assume that his ankle sprain is not severe and he'll be ready to go for week one. He's going to be your right tackle, Dwayne Brown at left tackle. And then the offensive guard positions, they are going to have Damian Lewis and Mike Iupati playing those two positions. And then at the center spot, I'm buying Justin Britt starting in week one for the Seattle Seahawks. I think Justin Britt is going to get signed this week. I have just kind of had this, there's just been an inkling the last week or so with the way that the center competition was playing out that they just weren't happy with things there. And Britt being healthy enough to play again, you can get him at a much cheaper cost than what his previous contract was. So that's kind of my wrench that I'm throwing into this projection, is Justin Britt is going to be signed. Maybe Ethan Posick starts week one, but I think Justin Britt is going to get back into the lineup. He's going to bring you some continuity up front so that you have another guy that has a lot of experience in this system, has started a lot of games. So I have those five players. I have Ethan Posick making it behind Justin Britt as the backup center, also gives you some guard depth from past experience. I have Jamarco Jones and Cedric Oboehi as the two backup tackles. Right now, Oboehi would be your starting right tackle if Brandon Shell is out for any amount of time. So you got to have him on the roster, and he'll play that sixth lineman role that George Fant's done in the past if he's not already in the starting lineup. And then the guard spots, Phil Haynes has had a few practices he's missed with an injury, but I think he's still a player they're very excited about. Keep him around as a backup. Potentially he could start at some point this year at that left guard position. And I'm keeping Jordan Simmons around. I know that his durability is something that's very questionable. He's had a hard time staying healthy, but he's looked good in practice. When he's on the field and healthy, he looks good. So I'm keeping Jordan Simmons here. And I guess my big stunner here, because it is going to cost the Seahawks money, I am releasing BJ Finney. And I know that a lot of our listeners are going to be like, why would you eat that money? Well, at some point, you got to realize you made a mistake here. If you have to bring Justin Britt back and Finney has not been able to make any ground up on Ethan Posick, then the contract you signed him to in March already looks like a big mistake. And sometimes smart franchises just move on from those mistakes as quickly as they can. And so I think that's what's going to play out here. Maybe they'll end up keeping Finney because he can play both guard spots as well. But I think Jordan Simmons is a player that Mike Solari absolutely loves. And I think in the end, the Seahawks are going to be like, look, it just hasn't panned out. We already know it's not going to work out. And I think they're going to move on.
Well, it's an interesting take. With Finney, there's no doubt. I have been disappointed. I still think that he keeps a roster spot because of the positional versatility, as you mentioned, and his experience. The fact that he came into this season, like so many other free agents, obviously has to learn to a new system, and that's going to take some time. But again, just because of the fact that the Seattle allocated as much of their funds to him as they did, I just don't know that they're willing to pull the plug just yet. Certainly, if they were to actually bring in Justin Britt to the team, then that would change everything. So that is absolutely a possibility. I think that Justin Britt is a terrific football player, terrific leader. I think that would be a great sign by Seattle if, in fact, he is 100% healthy. But I have to agree with you when it comes to like players like Jordan Simmons. I think that might surprise some people. We haven't talked about him much, but some of those big runs that we saw from Carlos Hyde yesterday, I just remember watching him on the replay screens, and often it was big number 66 who was just massive. And he's listed at 6'4", 339 pounds, but it looks like it's all in his chest and his thighs. I mean, he is just a massive man out there, and it just plays the type of football that the Seahawks like, and he has been healthy to this point, whereas one of my favorite players, Phil Haynes, has not. And so, there's an old saying, you can't make the club in the tub. And so we kind of like what we talked about, the wide receiver positions, where we think guys like a Cody Thompson or guys like a Seth Dawkins, you know, even or a Philip Dorsett, who have had some issues with durability throughout camp. That could bite Phil Haynes, who is just a guard. Whereas, again, Finney has a little bit more positional versatility. So for me, I currently have it as 9 offensive linemen making the team. And 2 players who I've talked about a lot, Phil Haynes and Kyle Fuller, not being among them. But I have it being just going off of their roster right now. Simmons, Finney, Lewis, Yapati, Posick, Shell, Jones, Obwehi, and Dwayne Brown as being the 9 offensive linemen at our currently on this roster that I think make the 53-man starting roster.
Man, no Phil Haynes on your roster. That was a little bit of a surprise, but you're right. He's had issues staying healthy since they drafted him, and Jordan Simmons is playing really darn well on the practice field and in the mock scrimmages, so you can't rule out anything like that. The Seahawks have done it in the past, so we'll see. We'll see how this plays out. I'm really curious what they're going to do with that offensive line, especially if Justin Britt is signed. If they bring him back, then all those reserves better be looking in the rearview mirror here, like, okay, you know, who would I have to hold off to get a roster spot, because they only can keep so many guys. When we come back from the third quarter, we're going to change the defense, and there are several position groups that I don't know about you, Rob, but I had several where I was very torn on picking the last couple of people for the 53-man roster projection. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo, or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about it. With a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication, it's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Just go to GetRoman.com/XXX to connect with a healthcare professional for an online visit and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL. GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL.
Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me as always, Rob Rang. We just dished out our picks on offense for our latest 53-man roster projections. Now we're going to swing over to the defensive side of the football, and we'll start at the defensive end position. 2 starters for me right now are the same guys that have been there throughout training camp. Rasheem Green is going to be playing that 5-tech spot. Benson Maioa is going to be playing at the Leo position. Both of them have had very good training camps. Rasheem Green had a pretty good mock game yesterday. Maioa was a little quieter, but he played well in the first mock scrimmage that they had last Saturday. So those 2 guys are going to be the starters. And then behind them, LJ Collier, he's going to play some snaps in that 5-tech position. He's also going to reduce inside in passing situations and play that 3-tech role as a defensive tackle. And he's looked pretty good in that role at practice this year. Rookie Alton Robinson, been one of the major revelations of this training camp. I think he's going to get plenty of snaps at that Leo position. And he's 270-plus pounds. You can play him at the 5-tech now as well. That has given him some positional versatility I think the Seahawks didn't expect from the rookie out of Syracuse. Darrell Taylor has yet to play. He's currently on the NFI list. I have to think it's starting to trend towards where Colby Parkinson's at, where maybe he gets back on the field here in the next week or so, but is he going to actually be ready to play in week 1? So I'm actually listing him starting the year on the NFI list. That's not what fans want to hear, because that means we won't see him in game action until week 7, but it is what it is. He is just not healthy enough right now to be on the practice field, and they've got to be cautious with the rookies. So Brandon Jackson right now coming back from getting knocked out in that first mock scrimmage, but I think Jackson's going to be able to get back here soon, and I think he's going to make the roster because of his positional versatility. When Darrell Taylor returns, then Jackson might be the one in the middle of the season that could get an axe. That's the unfortunate reality of this business when you're a player that's on the fringe on a roster.
Yeah, it is. And it's one of the things that the Seahawks love about Brandon Jackson is he has been one of those players that even after being cut has shown the resiliency to come back. And so I think that is one of the huge storylines to watch here is just what is Brandon Jackson's true health as well as Daryl Taylor's, because both of them could be on your roster day one. They could be off your roster on day one with the hope that you're bringing them back a little bit later, but both obviously important to Seattle, especially in their pass rush. But as I have it right now, I basically agree with you that there's going to be the four defensive ends: Rasheem Green, Benson Maioa, Alton Robinson, L.J. Collier. And you know, the way that Seattle has their roster that was handed out to us at the mock game, they have Bruce Irvin as listed as a linebacker. But either way, I think that you could list him in that spot as well. But I certainly have those five players making Seattle's team.
Let's go to the defensive tackle position now. Jaron Reed and Puna Ford going to be the starters on day one. Both of them are back healthy now. And then behind them, DeMarcus Christmas. He missed a couple practices, but he came back. He's had a solid camp. Brian Monet has had a solid camp as well. Pete Carroll's talked him up several times. So those are my big four right there. I've been torn on putting PJ Johnson on the roster, but ultimately I decided to keep Brandon Jackson instead because of his ability to also play defensive end. And I already felt like they had that big bodied skill set with Brian Monet as well as DeMarcus Christmas. So PJ Johnson, certainly a player I think the Seahawks would love to get on their practice squad based on their initial impressions, but couldn't quite pull the trigger to get him on the roster. And at this point, there's still a chance they could bring in a player like Damon Harrison or Marcel Darius, but each day that passes in training camp, they don't add a veteran like that, makes it less and less likely. So this is the first projection where I haven't had one of those players making this team, and I'm just going with the guys that are currently on the roster.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm doing the same thing. I mean, I have the same guys making the roster. Obviously, your two starters in Jaron Reed and Puna Ford. Brian Monet, I have as making the roster as well. And to me, the conversation really kind of goes down to those other three: DeMarcus Christmas, Cedric Lattimore, PJ Johnson. As you mentioned, Brandon Jackson, his positional versatility, that would give the Seahawks, a lot of flexibility there. As it stands right now, I was intrigued by the few snaps I saw from PJ Johnson. I have yet to really be impressed with either Lattimore or Christmas to this point, although they are both younger, at least in the case of Lattimore, is a younger player. And obviously Christmas was a player that the Seahawks drafted a year ago. So they're going to have a little bit more familiarity with those guys than they are with PJ Johnson. But at that size, 6'3", 335 pounds, he would be the only other defensive lineman that they would have that would be up over that 310-pound mark other than Monet. Just knowing that you have to take on those San Francisco 49ers, a team that does love to run the football, I just wonder if that size isn't something that they're going to value. But it should be known, though, this is a team the last year when they released their initial 53-man, they only had three traditional defensive tackles. So I have them keeping four at this point. But I think, again, Brandon Jackson had the defensive end role because he's 295 pounds, that he might be able to give you that versatility that you're looking for.
At linebacker, really no surprises for me this time. I did bring back Ben Burkervin, who was not on the roster on my last roster projection. I just think he's played way too well at practice and in mock scrimmages for them to release him. He's really made some big strides in his second season. But your starters, Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, and originally I thought Jordan Brooks was going to break into the lineup on day one. It looks like Bruce Irvin's going to be the guy. He's had a really good camp, and he brings you that familiarity and comfort playing that Sam linebacker spot. I think Jordan Brooks is going to start making a move for some playing time once the season starts. He's made some plays in the mock scrimmages. He's getting more comfortable out there. But for now, the three veterans are going to be your starters. And then you've got Jordan Brooks, Cody Barton, Shaquem Griffin. I thought about putting him at defensive end. He's kind of like Bruce Irvin. They've been following each other around. He's going to rush off the edge a lot. You're going to keep him around because he's shown flashes in camp of being a threat off the edge, building off his strong finish to last year, and of course, a very good special teams player. So really nothing major, no major changes at that linebacker spot. I think keeping seven right now can be justified based on the special teams ability of several of those young reserves.
Yeah, and they kept seven linebackers a year ago, and so I think that there is a possibility that we see no cuts among Seattle's linebackers. I think if there is a linebacker who is in trouble, you mentioned right off the bat, and Ben Burkervin. I just don't know that there is a likely likelihood that he is going to be playing on defense. I think that he's basically a special teams player. And if that's the case, then obviously he's going to be one of the guys that's very much on the bubble. Now, that said, I've mentioned him before. One of Seattle's special teams coaches, Larry Izzo, did exactly that and carved out one heck of an NFL career. And I think that BBK can do that. But at the same time, I think if there is a linebacker who is released, I think that it's got to be BBK, just because of the fact you're looking at a player who's pretty much just an outside linebacker in Seattle's scheme. And I don't know if that's going to be enough, given the rest of the speed they already have on the roster.
Going to the secondary, not a lot of questions here. Shaquille Griffin, I have Quentin Dunbar being the other starter, but right now Trey Flowers is still getting most of those reps. They're just easing Dunbar back in. But we have seen some plays from Dunbar the last few days. He's starting to get comfortable back there with the scheme. He's getting back into football shape. So I think that's a position where the competition is really on now here for the last couple weeks before week one. So you've got three guys with a ton of starting experience there. Ugo Amadi also making the roster, and that's where I'm cutting things off here in this projection. I know that might sound crazy not having Nico Thorpe on the team because of his special teams ability, but I think that you eventually are going to reach a point here where there are going to be some surprise cuts, because they've had some players that have really surprised here. And I think when you also look at the safety position, Marquise Blair and Lano Hill are both really good special teams players as well. And neither one of them is in the starting lineup, because Quandre Diggs and Jamal Adams are your two starters there. Blair's going to get his snaps, but Lano Hill's not going to be playing many snaps unless there's an injury on defense. He's going to be on the team for his special teams ability. I just think at this point, I was torn on keeping Nico Thorpe around. I basically was battling between Thorpe, Ben Burkervin, and Brandon Jackson here looking at the depth chart. And ultimately, I decided to keep one less secondary player. Probably not what's going to happen, but I just thought it was really difficult trying to pick between those three players, especially when you're looking at youth versus experience. Thorpe's had some injuries the last couple years, so made the tough decision there. I could see it either way, where he's on the roster or not. We'll just have to see what the Seahawks decide to do at a couple other position groups.
Yeah, I think that the secondary is going to be fascinating, what Seattle does, because you just mentioned one of the players I think is very much on the bubble, and the 30-year-old Nico Thorpe. Now, he is one of the most trusted players on that team, I think, from Pete Carroll's perspective. And there was a couple of different times where during the mock game where I saw Nico Thorpe and Pete Carroll kind of off to the sidelines having conversations. And that can be a good thing. That can be a bad thing. I think that's going to be interesting. But we know how the Seahawks under John Schneider have generally preferred the younger, cheaper players. Not that Nico Thorpe is anything in terms of, you know, salary cap restrictions or has this bloated salary, anything like that. But at the same time, the younger players. And I'll mention one young player who I think is the only guy that of the undrafted free agents. I mentioned Tyler Mabry, really made some splash plays at the tight end position. De'Veon Renfro has made some splash plays. You've talked about him a few times. He had a couple of splash plays yesterday during the game as well. So that to me could be the potential surprise there. I went the kind of the opposite way of you though, Corbin. I have 10 defensive backs making this roster at this point. And I'll just go off the list as I have it. Trey Flowers, Quentin Dunbar, Shaquille Griffin, of course. I do have Nico Thorpe on the roster at this point. I did put De'Veon Renfro on this team with the acknowledgement that of course DJ Reed is going to be either be on the PUP or the NFI list or whatever the case might be. And then again, the safeties, Blair, Amadi, Adams, obviously, Diggs, obviously, and then Lano Hill as well. So I went with 10 defensive backs. Last year, the Seahawks kept 9 defensive backs. Again, I think that the way that the NFL is shifting, I think that you're going to see a lot of teams, maybe the Seahawks, maybe not, but a lot of teams that are going to be selected or keep a few more of those back 7 defenders, linebackers and secondary. I think it's Seattle's strength and that they're concerned that they're going to lose some of their young talent.
Yeah, that's something that certainly is worth watching here. Like I said, it was really difficult picking between, do you want to keep Ben Burkervin when you already have Barton Griffin and Jordan Brooks as backups, good special teams guy? Do you want to keep Nico Thorpe, a little older player, but one that's well-respected in that locker room and by the coaching staff? Brandon Jackson, also another very respected player, especially if Daryl Taylor's not available week one. So there are a lot of moving parts here. I will admit, this is a little tougher projection than I've normally seen, but I agree with you that the secondary, you could see as many as 10 guys. You could see it be down to 8 like I have it, depending on what the injury situation is at other positions. It might be one of those things where the first week of the year they have a little less depth there, and then they add some guys in week two. We saw that last year when they brought Jamar Taylor back. And so usually the week one roster doesn't mean that that's what you're going to see for the next 16 weeks. There's going to be changes, especially amid COVID-19. So I wouldn't expect that the roster that comes out for Atlanta be the same one that you see in week two, week three, so forth. There are going to be changes as the season progresses. And we've even seen a day after the official 53-man roster's picked that they make roster changes, putting guys on IR and different stuff like that. So a lot of moving parts. Going to be a lot of fun to see how that plays out. And we still got 2 weeks for there to be some players that make a run at a roster spot that maybe weren't on our team on this particular projection. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at CorbinSmithNFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on our Friday episode, I'll be joined by Nick Lee. We are going to be playing a little three up, three down on the offensive and defensive side of the football. Which players have bolstered their stock the most through 3 weeks of practice and two mock scrimmages, and which ones have hurt their cause trying to make the Seahawks 53-man roster? Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Go Hawks.